Senator Kramer waiting for today's Talk Radio Town Hall and a full bank of calls wanting to talk about what is going on in Washington, D.C. Every bit as egregious as what happened in the North Dakota House yesterday. Senator Kramer, welcome back. Can you start by telling us, just on a regular order process standpoint, of speaking of rules not being followed, what is happening this weekend with COVID-19?
Yeah, well, what's really weird, Scott, this is an example. What we're doing this week is an example of the archaic rules of the United States Senate. And I'll do this as succinctly as I can. There's this budgetary process. First of all, in Congress, it's very different than what North Dakotans are used to in the state legislature. There's really, we've operated without a budget, you know, many times. The president proposes a budget. The House and Senate pass budgets, or sometimes they don't pass budgets. But the budget isn't the appropriations mechanism necessarily. That said, a couple of weeks, a few weeks ago, if you recall, we had a 15-hour session, went all the way through a Friday night into Saturday morning, on budget resolutions. Budget resolution is not law. It is the budget presented by the House and the Senate, and they have to be reconciled. If you can reconcile the House and Senate budget, then you have a one-shot opportunity, and they'll have two or three of them, by the way, because of different things I won't go into now, but opportunity to pass that reconciled bill with 50 votes plus one, that being the vice president in the Democrats' case, not needing the 60 votes to overcome a filibuster. And just so I want people to know, I'm walking to the floor right now to vote on the First Amendment, which is Bernie Sanders' amendment, to restore the $15 an hour minimum wage. And I'm about to be inundated by reporters. I'm going to walk right by them. sorry, you guys.
Thank you. Yes.
So, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, and you've seen this circus before, Scott, so you know what I'm doing right now. I'm just going past the escalators. So that's what they're trying to do. But the problem is there are very tight rules that surround reconciliation in the Senate. Not in the House, but in the Senate there are. Like, you know, you're only supposed to deal with the mandatory side of the budget. It has to be confined to revenue, that is taxes, and or spending, that is your budget spending. And you can't be, go too far astray, which is why right now we're voting on the Sanders Amendment, because remember the House included a $15 an hour minimum wage, which is against the budget rules because that's not a budget item. Its impact on the budget is incidental to the policy, so it's not a policy vehicle. That's what's going on. The opportunity with that, I guess, the opportunity with that is that it's it means every amendment can be voted on. Every amendment, there are hundreds of them. I have several myself.
Oh, I see.
That's what creates.
I got it. They want the vote on the $15. Will they win that?
No. Okay. No, because it was ruled out of order.
I got it.
So now that means it'll take 60 votes to win that amendment. Good point, though. That's a 60-vote margin, or 60-vote total.
Okay, and here's what I want people to know. You're voting on a $2 trillion COVID relief package. By the way, $6 trillion has already been implemented and approved in various ways, the Federal Reserve and actual votes in the Senate of COVID relief. We're a year into this. So this is $2 trillion of new COVID relief on top of the six you've already done. And, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's not been one committee hearing on it. Is that right?
No, well, that's the other thing. No committee hearings, not in the House. Not in the Senate, not in the committees of jurisdiction. And by the way, of the $6 trillion, if you include a couple trillion, you know, for Federal Reserve, then about $3 trillion hasn't even been spent. So of the $4 trillion that is mandatory, or I mean that is discretionary that we passed over the last, by the way, with 90 senators voting for them, all five of them, because, you know, they, of the bipartisan nature of it, $1 trillion of that is yet to be spent.
And how much of the $2 trillion additional COVID relief is actually for anything to do with COVID?
Very little. In fact, the most liberal estimates are 9% of it. So 91% is not relevant at all. And I can break down, after I run and cast this bullet, maybe in a little longer statement, I can break down some of the things that are actually good in there. And that's the tragedy. They throw in some things, you know, for testing and some things for vaccine distribution, maybe a little economic relief for some people that need it. and then throw another $1.8 trillion on top of it and call it a COVID relief package.
We'll let you go vote, and back with more Senator Kramer after the break on What's on Your Mind. So your budget chairman gave us an indication of just how bad this is and hopes you might draw blood first on. Anything you want to add to what Lindsey Graham had to say in his usual very colorful way?
The day I start adding on to what Lindsey Graham says is a sad day for America, because it's hard to add, but I will try to clarify maybe a little bit. So his point about drawing first blood, what he's talking about there, that's a strategic illustration, I guess, of one of the first amendments that we're going to bring up on the Republican side will be to amend that $4 an hour supplemental unemployment insurance benefit that's going to be added to the, of course, the state benefits they already get, all the way into September of this year, which is a perverse incentive for people to go back to work. And I can go into a lot of details on in this bill that incent exactly that, in addition to this one. But we do have a couple of Democrats that have expressed a strong desire to fix that, get it to $300 a week through June. And I would certainly support that amendment. And by the way, this is a good illustration of how this place will work, and it's important for your listeners to know this, I think, because we'll support that. It'll get all 50 Republican senators. If it gets a couple of Democratic senators, that means it passes. That means it will become part of the new bill. I still won't vote for the bill because it's still got $1.85 trillion too many dollars in it. But it does make the bill less bad, saves about $125 billion, and at least most of the people getting unemployment benefits will not make more not working than they would be working. So that's what he was talking about in terms of drawing blood. I think shortly after that one, Scott, people will see a large substitute amendment come in. It's a $600 billion package that would replace the $1.9 trillion. The $600 package introduced by Susan Collins is still about $300 billion too much for me, to be honest with you. It just think we can get better and more focused on that. But anytime I can save $1.2, $1.3 trillion, I'm going to support that amendment. After that, there's going to be just a host of amendments. Let me give you just a couple of highlights. There are $414 billion of spending in this bill that remove the Hyde protections. That is, the protections that prevent taxpayer dollars from funding abortions. I believe that Hyde amendment, we may succeed in that, not by amendment, but by the action of the rules, that the parliamentarian ruling that out of order, because that is a policy change. That's not a spending or a revenue change. And these are the things that are going to be very difficult for Democrats when this bill goes back to the House, because the AOC, Nancy Pelosi crowd, the two speakers of the House over there and their followers, this is religion to them, to be able to fund abortions. If they can't have that in the bill, it's going to make it harder for them to support this bill, because this bill is going to pass with 50 Democratic votes than Kamala Harris if they don't get a single Republican, and I hope they don't. Another perverse incentive I want to throw out, because I mentioned the incentive to not work. There is money in this bill that allows federal employees 600 hours additional leave to not work. 600 at $1,400 a week, they can go home, collect that $1,400 a week, as long as they promise not to work and as long as they promise to keep their kids home. Do I have to, I know that your listeners are smart enough to know all the perversions in that. That means we're paying them to not work. They're supposed to be working for you, the taxpayers. Second of all, it raises the question whether they should have a job at all. Third, it's contingent on them staying home with their children, so it's an incentive for their children to not go to school. And fourth, it's an incentive for the schools to not open. It's the most, it's absolutely as wrong-headed as you can get, and that's just scratching the surface of stupidity in this bill.
Let's take some calls for Senator Kramer here. Mark in Bismarck, question on unconstitutional actions. Your question for Kevin, go ahead. Mark in Bismarck? How about Phil in Fargo? Let's go to Phil in Fargo. You're next to What's on Your Mind. Quickly, Phil.
Yeah, Senator Kramer, you support Israel all the time, but you know by doing that, you're supporting the transgender industry that comes out of Tel Aviv from Teva Pharmaceuticals. Americans need to know this racket that's going on. all the money that's going to Israel is coming back on the merry-go-round that funds all this crap that you're complaining about right now, like that gets into the hands of the people that don't have to go to work because they work for the federal government.
Okay, let Senator Kramer address that. Go ahead, Senator.
Well, first of all, most of the money that goes to Israel from the United States is in support of defending themselves and as a result, reducing the money we have to spend on national defense in the region defending Israel. So they can defend themselves. Plus, in return, we get a lot of their technology and technological advancements, brain power, and the fact that we have a really good allied neighbor in the Middle East in a place where there aren't that many allies. However, thanks to the Trump administration for 4 years, and I brought this up yesterday in a hearing in the Armed Services Committee with the Biden administration's nominee to be the Undersecretary for Policy at the Department of Defense. Thanks to the Trump presidency and the Abraham Accords, we are building the alliances between Arab nations and Israel so that we don't have to rely solely on our good friends Israel to keep terrorism at bay, not only by protecting themselves, but by looking out for all of us, especially at a time when Iran is emerging again. And now that we have a Biden administration that's very pro-Iran as opposed to pro-Israel, and you given options, I don't think there's much of a decision there.
Appreciate the call. We got to keep moving here because we got a lot to get to. We had a call off the air before, disappointed in your vote for the energy secretary as well as Senator Hovind's vote for the energy secretary, saying why aren't they fighting more. Also wanted to know why we don't take on the executive orders and fight those as well in the Congress.
Yeah. Well, with regard to the executive orders, they're called executive orders for a reason, because the executive orders them, and thus Congress doesn't have a say in them. That's why they use executive orders, to avoid going to Congress. What we can do, and what we are doing in some amendments this week and other legislation that we've introduced, including some that I've introduced, is to counter those executive orders. I did one, in fact, just recently. We've got, I think, 28 co-sponsors now. We'll be introducing it soon, related to the Fair Access Act, and that has to do with bank discrimination against illegal industries within, categorical exclusion for, like, gun manufacturers, other firearms industry, coal, oil, gas, all that stuff. Anyway, Scott, so that's how you fight that stuff, and we are fighting those things. I'm not sure, when people say fight, I'm not really sure sometimes what they mean or if they even know what they mean, but executive orders are used by presidents to avoid Congress, and so then you have to be aggressive on the other side of it, but you also have to have a majority to pass those things. That's that item. With regard to the Secretary Granholm, the vote for Secretary Granholm, a couple things to remember. When a cabinet secretary comes to us, or a nominee, and this is the one that's comes through the Energy and Natural Resources Committee, which Senator Hovind sits on, he and I talk about these a lot before we cast our votes. A lot of things go into the calculation. Nobody's confused by the Biden administration's feelings on energy. But just a couple things to think about. First of all, she's going to win, right? She is the secretary. She's going to be the secretary whether we vote for her or we don't vote for her. So you can fight. You can lead with your chin, and you can get a bloody nose and not have anything to show for it except for a bloody nose. Sometimes that's appropriate. And you know me, I'm happy to lead with my chin. But you also have to be calculating about it, because the Department of Energy is very important to North Dakota. There are lots of dollars that John Hovind and I have fought for and gotten into appropriations bills that Democrats have supported that support the research and development of industries in North Dakota, as well as the Energy and Environmental Research Center at the University of North Dakota, to find solutions. We're somewhat unique even in that regard, Scott. So the relationship with these people is not unimportant. I've supported some of them. I've opposed some of them. Some of them, they're just too far gone for me to support, even if they are going to win. But you have to be tactical. The position matters. The people matter. The outcomes for North Dakota matter. And all that goes into the calculation determining whether to fight for, fight against, or try to fight with somebody.
Kevin, I wanted to play a clip that I saw Jason Bohr tweeted out earlier. Jason is, of course, from the Lignite Energy Council. And he said, Todd, if you could cue this up, it's early in today's Slack lineup there under a Jason Bohr tweet. He said, You have to see Kevin Cramer make a great point here. Under the draft clean power plan, North Dakota could have been an ally, and Senator Cramer could have been the bridge between McCabe and the state. Now, he's talking about your questioning of the nominee for the EPA head, and I guess I'm raising this because this would be an example of you fight when you can fight, and
right.
And what you can extract in the way of making a bad situation better, right? Talk a little
Where
bit about
is this.
It's in the top of Slack, second thing for today. But go, Kevin can describe it first, and then we'll play it. He sure, basically, sure. Go ahead.
So this is actually Janet McCabe, who's the nominee to be the deputy secretary of deputy administrator of the EPA. North Dakotans may remember Janet McCabe because she was the head of the air division at EPA when the Clean Power Plan was passed, which was the Obama Clean Power Plan, so-called Clean Power Plan, that we sued, along with 25 other states, we being North Dakota, sued against. And North Dakota was the most egregiously victimized state by the Obama administration with the Clean Power Plan. She was the author of it. She called it her proudest accomplishment. And I spared no punches with her the other day when we had our hearing to consider her confirmation.
Yeah, and that's up on my social media. I encourage people to have it. I was going to play it here, but we got a lot of calls waiting, too. So let's go to the next one, who is, tell me, Daniel, the next one we should, who's been waiting the longest. I don't have my...
And by the way, before somebody accuses me of beating up women, spare no punches was a figurative line and not a literal one.
Right. Yes. Very good point. And this is something you need to explain about 20 times a day now in this environment. Exactly. Very important. All right. We don't have enough time before the break, but we'll get to it. I normally can take the calls myself. I can't today just because of a little technical issue here. So having some challenges there, but we shall get to the next call when we come back. Somebody said, did you say $1,400 a week in relief? That must be a month. No?
True.
What's that?
For federal employees. That's true. $1,400 a week for federal employees who promised to not work and make sure their children stay home from school.
Wow.
$1,400 a week. Unbelievable.
How do we sign up again?
The answer is yes. That's what he said. More after this.
Winter is an annual event. It's not a vortex. We don't shut the lights off because it's cold. We crank up the coal and the gas to make sure that people stay warm. We don't shift the gas away from manufacturing or heating homes to go over here to a peaking station. We've been talking about the resiliency of the grid for decades before it was the cool thing to do. And so we really, I will just say to you, Ms. McCabe, I'm all about second and third and fourth chances. I'm grateful for all of them that I've had. You have a steeper hill to climb, frankly, than most. Largely because in 2014, you sat before the same committee and promised federalism. You did again today, promised federalism, considering the states, listening to the states. And yet, the Clean Power Plan proved to be one of the most overbearing big government impositions on states that ever, which is why 26 states successfully...
So how do you trust somebody like that again? How do you trust somebody like that again? And do you believe that, you know, she just did whatever she did, or was she told, no, you'll do this? Or, I mean, do you believe this woman in the position can be believed a second and third and fourth time? Is Kevin there?
I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Okay. No, I can't.
The, the problem is Janet McCabe was the architect of the Clean Power Plan. She called it her proudest accomplishment.
Oh, my gosh.
So this isn't somebody that doesn't know. And if you listen to her answer to me, it was, but Senator, at that time, we listened to everybody. And while we might maybe didn't talk to, you know, we didn't come to North Dakota, which, by the way, they did. Gina McCarthy did, the EPA administrator at the time. We were working constantly with your officials and your health officials. And I'm like, and the result of that was a 400% increase in the emissions reductions from the proposed rule to the final rule. That's what it means. In other words, no, you can't. Her and I are having a private conversation next week. I'll give her another chance to explain herself and why this time will be different. But people should understand, because it gets back to the previous person's point, I guess, text or email. Her boss will be Michael Regan. He's the person up to be the EPA administrator. Michael Regan is a young energy regulator from North Carolina. He's got a lot of Republican support. He's a gentleman of a guy. I think he's more open-minded than she is. I don't believe for a minute that he's going to do anything other than, you know, than carry the Biden agenda. But I do believe, and he has committed to coming to North Dakota. And I do believe he'll be more open-minded. He'll have a better perspective from a state because he was an energy regulator in a state. But I worry that in as much as anything, he will end up working for Janet McCabe, even though she will be the deputy, because ahead of him.
So you'll fight her nomination, obviously, tooth and nail. You're not going to believe
her.
Yeah.
There's just nothing. I don't know. Let's put it this way. I don't know how she gets out of what she's already done.
Here's a text from somebody saying Republicans better start fighting like the third monkey on the ramp to Noah's Ark as the rain begins. And you know, this is, again, a mentality I hear every day. But then I hear you saying that's exactly what we're doing right now.
That's why we're prepared to spend 24 hours tonight in this chamber doing this. The thing that's, I think, unfortunate is a lot of people don't get to see that. C-SPAN's not anybody's favorite channel, right? Much less all the sub-channels under C-SPAN that watch committee, nomination processes and all of those things where they see this fight taking place.
Emailer, Ron says, what steps are you taking to keep this from happening in North Dakota just as it happened in Texas? The influx of infested illegal aliens dumped into the state of Texas. We don't want this in North Dakota. What can you tell your constituents of the steps? What is your plan that you're going to take to prevent this from happening to North Dakota? Legal immigration is a great thing, but we don't want illegal aliens. And I can hear the backup alarm of the dump truck already. Thanks for bringing this to Senator Kramer, says Ron.
Yeah, no, that's great. And we have lots of legislation to do exactly that. But people have to remember, we are not in control. We'll keep highlighting the issue. And part of, by the way, what we're doing for the next, several hours, well into the morning tomorrow and beyond, is so that people do know. In other words, even if you can't win these amendment fights, you have to bring them up so that people there have been no hearings on any of this stuff. So without hearings, people aren't aware of what's happening. With regard to immigration, Scott, and I've been talking to various people about getting on your show, getting on this show to talk specifically about what's happening. Remember that if you look at the immigration numbers, illegal immigration numbers from 2019 to 2020, you'll see what the incredible impact of what Donald Trump did when those big caravans were coming across. He eliminated the catch and release program. Biden has restored it. He created a relationship with the triangle states, the three triangle states in Central America, to prevent the incentive for them to come across Mexico. Joe Biden undid that already. He had created the Stay in Mexico order, working with the Mexican government, they kept people in Mexico before they crossed so that they wouldn't be released until their court date came up so that you had legal immigration manageable. Joe Biden eliminated that relationship right away and basically said, everyone come, get in your caravans, buy some children if you have to, rent them if you can. The coyotes will rent them fairly cheap. Come on across and don't worry about bringing a whole bunch of COVID in. Mexico or Texas, people in Texas and Mississippi are Neanderthals for removing their masks. But don't worry if you're an illegal alien.
It's unbelievable. The fight this weekend is all about saving another $2 trillion in debt that is unnecessary. Senator Kramer,
not to mention a whole bunch of policies there.
Right. Keep battling. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you, sir. Back to your votes.
Bye-bye.
Petroserve USA brings you the program. Great lunch specials today. See them.